Okay, guys, thank you very much, firstly, for having me on as a guest presenter today, normally with Truth News Radio Australia. Today, I'm coming on to actually interview a filmmaker from the United States, from New York City. His name is Brent Leung, and he's made a really important film, which is winning awards at quite a lot of film festivals around the United States. And the title of that film is House of Numbers. And the film is, for listeners who are unfamiliar with this, there is actually a raging controversy over the actual causes of AIDS and whether HIV is actually the cause of AIDS. Many people are unaware of it because it has not been well expressed through the media, but there are quite a few really high-level scientists, Nobel Prize winners, highly credible scientific people who've been questioning the HIV theory of AIDS for more than 20 years. And what Brent has done is he's gone around the country and around the world interviewing some of these dissident scientists, as they're called, and he's also interviewed some of the top research scientists, for example, the co-discoverer of the HIV virus and the people who basically are the movers and shakers in the AIDS research world. And he's put the whole thing together as a complete film. Now, I'll just give you a brief bio of Brent Leung. Brent was born in Canada, and he went to Nashville, Tennessee to attend the Watkins Film School. And after 3 years of cinema study, Brent decided to devote his full attention to investigating the HIV/AIDS phenomenon, which had troubled him since his high school days. The result is his first feature, the documentary House of Numbers. I'd just like to welcome to the show Brent. Are you there, Brent?
I'm here. Thank you very much for having me.
Great. I hope that was a good introduction for you. Now, Brent, please just feel free to elaborate on this in any way you wish, but it'd be good if we could just start off by exploring how you came to make the film.
Well, it goes back to my first trip to New York City, and I was sitting in this diner, and this gentleman just started, this complete stranger just started talking to me, and he started saying weird oddities like HIV doesn't exist, you know, and AIDS is not a disease, and HIV doesn't cause it. And I have to admit, I thought the guy was a little crazy, but I was sort of intrigued by what he was saying. So when I got home, I decided to do just a little bit of research. And you have to do a little bit of digging, but what I quickly discovered was there was indeed a controversy and has been since the very beginning as to whether HIV is the cause of immune deficiency. But I think what was even more intriguing was as I started to research, I discovered that though I grew up in the HIV/AIDS generation and though we've had a ton of education on it in school, at my age, it's affected our culture, the arts, education, everything. I actually didn't understand the difference between HIV and AIDS.
Right.
So it went from being something, some sort of a controversial look at an issue to, well, what is HIV, what is AIDS, and what is being done to cure it? And that's really what drove me in my research in the very beginning. And that's why I really wanted to interview the world's top scientists, activists, and researchers on HIV.
Indeed, and in the film, you've basically covered all of the viewpoints. You've covered the official viewpoint fairly well, from what I understand. I mean, I haven't actually seen the film. I've watched your trailers that you've got on the website, and I've also listened to some of the interviews you've done. And as I understand it, you've covered all of the mainstream viewpoints fairly well, but you've also covered the viewpoints of people like Peter Duesberg, Carrie Mullis, and quite a few other dissident scientists, including some from Australia based in Perth. And so you've done a fair bit of travelling to get all this material together, and I really appreciate the amount of work you must have done to do that. And I'd just like to point out that, I've actually been looking at this for quite a long time. I've probably first started looking at these alternative views of AIDS in the mid to late 90s. And what I was struck by when I did my research was that this sort of disconnect between understanding that the AIDS test is not really an AIDS test. The AIDS test is actually a test for blood proteins, which supposedly mean you have antibodies to a virus. And so the question of, you know, the AIDS test doesn't really tell you you've got AIDS. It just tells you you've got certain antibodies at best. And I think that's one of the most important points that people don't understand when you say to them, well, you know, the AIDS test is ineffective, or, you know, there's inadequate proof that HIV causes AIDS. Would you kind of like agree with that as a good way to look at it initially?
Well, I think first I'm sorry, I have to say that there's no controversy about that. I know it's a technicality, but it's really important. It's really an HIV test. It's not about AIDS, because AIDS is something completely separate than HIV.
Indeed, but I think in a lot of people's minds, it's kind of blurred. I think that when people think they're having an when people are having an HIV test, they think they're having an AIDS test, and they don't understand, because it hasn't really been clearly enough articulated, that an HIV test is not actually an AIDS test. And it's just a really important, but, you know, small but important point.
Well, I actually think it's an enormous point. I mean, AIDS is something that's quite confusing. You know, after traveling the globe, the one thing I realized is AIDS is not simple. AIDS is defined differently by different government bodies, different countries. The United States has redefined AIDS on four occasions. So AIDS is extremely complex. And what actually defines somebody who may be diagnosed as an AIDS case is not the same universally at all.
Indeed.
And if you look at CDC documentation, sometimes HIV is not even required to give you an AIDS diagnosis.
Indeed. And in different countries, you will be diagnosed completely differently based on a different set of conditions. And even the HIV test is interpreted differently in different countries. That's correct, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think this is what, you know, one of the first things I discovered was sort of the fragility around HIV testing. I myself took my very first HIV test in South Africa, and they gave me what they call a rapid test. And what I was blown away by was that the series of questions that I answered, how I answered them, you know, am I gay? Have I had a blood transfusion? Have I had unprotected sex? That actually played a role in how they diagnosed me for HIV. On top of that, the lady that actually administered my rapid test, which when you see the film, you'll see that they have three tests, and if one test is positive and one test is negative, they'll use what they call a tiebreaker test. And I asked her, is the tiebreaker test more accurate than the first two? And she said, yes. And I said to her, why don't we use the tiebreaker test? And she said, well, what if there's a problem with the tiebreaker? How will we know whether you're infected or not? And absolutely. Then, you know, when I went over to Germany, they won't even use those rapid tests to diagnose people with HIV in the developed world. So, and even in the developed world, there's debate over HIV testing.
Indeed. And look, I think a point I'd like to make, because I know we're going to get a lot of reaction to this, and people are going to say this is outrageous. You know, it's proven that HIV causes AIDS. How dare you say this? And this is quite a typical response to people bringing up these views. I just want to point out, because we do a lot on Truth News Radio of exposing bigger issues to do with corruption within Big Pharma and ways in which the public is being misled about many things. And I just want to point out that these controversies over the HIV testing, over what is the cause of AIDS, and of course the dangers of the toxic treatments that are provided for AIDS, need to be understood in this bigger context of the way in which the pharmaceutical industry, making massive profits and basically controlling research institutions and corrupting the peer review process of science, is actually, you know, there is an ongoing problem here. And so it's really important to understand it in context, I think. And I just want to make that really clear, because we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes. And when we come back, some of the people from the show are going to come on, and one of them is actually has been an AIDS educator. So she may have a few questions for you. But look, I just wanted to quickly cover a couple of other things that I noticed in your trailers, Brent. You interviewed Luc Montagnier, who is the who won the Nobel Prize in 2008 for actually discovering HIV. And in that interview, and this is probably one of the most important respected scientists in the whole profession, and he said in his interview with you, which I watched on the website, that people should look at other options other than the antiviral, antiretroviral therapy, such as just improving your immune system through better nutrition. And it was quite extraordinary to see a top scientist saying that.
That was one of the instances in when I was doing interviews where I actually was just blown away. I couldn't believe what he was saying. I mean, this is not something that I've ever heard reported on by the major media networks. I've never heard this come forward from people from NIH, you know, or different governing health bodies.
Indeed, in fact, there were savage attacks on Thabo Mbeki, the former president of South Africa, because he advocated the same thing. And I do remember listening to stuff on the BBC where they said, oh, you know, they said the herbal treatments or honey and, you know, stuff, you know, for AIDS. How ridiculous! You know, you've got to take the hard drugs. I've heard that sort of, you know, I've heard that said on news segments, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it very well may be that the drugs are what's needed. But the question is, we don't know. And the impact of his comments are really life-changing. They're policy-changing. And I think they really need to be investigated much further.
Indeed.
But just to go back quickly, I would like to also state, I know you mentioned that there's some controversy surrounding the subject matter. No time in our film, though, do we ever state that HIV does not cause AIDS or HIV is not linked to immune deficiency. This really is sort of a journalistic endeavor just to figure out what is going on with regard to HIV and AIDS around the world, as told by the world's experts on the subject matter.
Indeed, but you do present some of the views of those who question those views, indeed, don't you? You've actually got interviews with Carrie Mullis and Peter Duesberg in the film. Is that correct?
Yes, I think journalistically, it's sort of imperative that you present all sides of the story. To do so, I think, is cherry picking. And Carrie Mullis has won the Nobel Prize for discovering polymerase chain reaction. Peter Duesberg is in the National Academy of Sciences in the United States, and I believe their accolades sort of they deserve a seat at the table to talk about this matter. And I think it would be irresponsible journalism if you left them out of it.
Indeed. Thanks, Brent. Look, we're just going to take a short break. We'll be back in 3 minutes after some music. Please stand by.
I will believe you if you say it's true. Girl, you know I need you more than any words could. I've seen you before, turn and walk away. You say you won't come back, it's just a game anyway. We are hoping, yes, and we're praying. Yeah.
Okay, welcome back. You're with Workers Radio, 88.9 FM, Radio Skid Row. My name's Herawood Fenton. I'm standing in today to interview Brent Leung, who is the creator, director of a film by the name of House of Numbers. And you can find all the information about that film on the internet if you put in House of Numbers into Google or go to www.houseofnumbers.com. Now, we've basically been covering some of the main points of the film, and I'd just like to welcome to the discussion now Kat, who's a co-presenter of The Morning Show here. Kat, I understand you've got a bit of a background in AIDS and HIV education.
Yes. Hi, how are you going?
Great.
Hi. My past work has involved HIV AIDS education. I'm by no means an expert, but of course it's something that really does interest me. And in my line of work, I still meet with people who do have HIV or perhaps AIDS. And what interests me here is that you're saying that there may not be a correlation between HIV, the virus, and AIDS, the collection of symptoms.
Just let me clarify before we get into a tangent. Yeah. Brent's film presents all sides of a view of the views about it. So I might have misrepresented what the main thrust of his film there is, but you know, please continue.
Yep. Sorry.
What did Brent's got to say?
Yeah. Brent, did you hear what I said? Is that one of the things that's come out of your film, is that there isn't necessarily a connection between the virus, HIV, and AIDS, the collection of symptoms?
I don't think we can say that that is completely true. The film looks at many different components of HIV and AIDS. Nowhere does the film suggest overtly that HIV does not cause AIDS, because one of the things we do in the film, first of all, is we sort of separate the two. What is HIV and what is AIDS?
Yes.
And what does HIV cause? So the film does, through expert testimony, and I'd like to add, mainly by mainstream scientists, it does throw into question what role HIV plays in deteriorating one's immune system. But it doesn't give a point of view either way or come out with a conclusion either way.
My understanding is that HIV is the virus that latches onto cells and causes gradually the immune system to be impacted, and hence, you know, people then move on to having AIDS, a collection of symptoms, once their T count has dropped. And I'm just wondering whether you've found that there's any people who have AIDS that haven't tested positive to the HIV virus.
Well, and what you said is exactly what I thought going into this as well. I can tell you that I have met people that have been diagnosed as an AIDS case. Now, to be diagnosed with AIDS, it's important to also note that that doesn't mean that you're sick or that you have any symptoms of any kind, because it all goes to the definition of AIDS, and it depends on where you've been diagnosed, in which country, or what physician you saw.
Because in this country, there is a difference between being HIV positive and then having AIDS. AIDS is when you start displaying a certain amount, a certain kind of symptoms, and your T cell count has dropped to a certain level. So you're saying around the world that it's defined differently.
Yes, I mean, you could even go on the World Health Organization's website and they have an Excel sheet which gives you the different global definitions for AIDS. On top of that, it also shows different evolving definitions. But to answer your question, you know, we could look in the United States, we can look at the Centers for Disease Control's criteria for AIDS.
Yeah.
And in 1987, they changed the definition that you no longer required an HIV-positive test for an AIDS diagnosis, or if you didn't know the status of a person, they could be diagnosed with AIDS if they met the criteria. One of the people in the film, which we interviewed, named Hank Wilson, was one of those people who went to the doctor. He presented with Kaposi sarcoma, and he was never given an HIV test, and the doctor diagnosed him as having AIDS.
Right. Because
now, if you look at Africa also,
yeah.
In the beginning, you know, one of the people we interviewed was Peter Piot, who was the executive director of UNAIDS since 1996 through 2008. He talks about the first meeting they had in Bangui where they developed a diagnosis for AIDS that did not require an HIV test. So thousands, we don't know if it's thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions. There's no way to know. of people on the African continent and other third world countries have been diagnosed with AIDS just by certain criteria, none of which requires an HIV test, and all of which differs from country to country.
That's really interesting, because if someone comes up with a group of symptoms, that doesn't mean that they have AIDS.
Well, that's one of the things that a man named Joe McCormick, who helped come up with that definition that we also interviewed, says. He says you could present with tuberculosis,
yes.
You could lose body fat, and he said you could look like you have AIDS when you don't. Even in the United States, Martin Delaney, who started Project Inform, says that people can look like they have AIDS, but they have some other condition causing their immune deficiency.
Hmm. Yes, yeah, because you might have a deficient immune system, but that does not necessarily mean that you acquired that through the HIV virus.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you also explore...
So these are some of the questions that we raise in the film, you know, on top of the reliability of the HIV test,
yeah.
Things of that nature.
Do you also explore in your film the question of depending where you are in the world depends upon how you are treated? As in the first world, we no longer necessarily consider AIDS to be a death sentence because we have a whole lot of drugs to treat it, and plus the complementary therapies that you were mentioning a bit earlier. Whereas in Africa or in poorer nations, people are dying because they can't afford the medication.
Well, that is something that we do discuss in the film. Mm-hmm. You know, what are people dying of? Mm. And I can tell you one of the arguments, and again, these aren't my personal arguments. These are the arguments that we document and that we present. One of the arguments is that in third world countries, poverty is the leading cause of immune deficiency and death.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely a correlation between, you know, one thing we look at too is the accuracy of the statistics. But there's definitely a correlation with the statistics that UNAIDS provides and areas of the world that are impoverished.
Yes. And have you noticed that in the countries where you say people are diagnosed with AIDS but they haven't been provided with an HIV test or haven't been HIV positive, do you notice that certain groups in society are the ones who are being diagnosed this way? As in, you know, HIV/AIDS still carries a lot of stigma and thus discrimination. Are you noticing people from probably, maybe I'm just guessing, but poorer groups in societies are more likely to be diagnosed with AIDS? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know if you're leading to into an overarching, maybe like a conspiracy or...
Oh, no, I'm not the conspiracy theorist.
Can I just maybe clarify that by saying that I'm quite aware that the risk groups for AIDS are still very clearly defined, whereas a typical disease epidemic will move through the population in a fairly random manner. But AIDS has always been more or less confined to its risk groups, which are at present, correct me if I'm wrong, but intravenous drug users, homosexual men... and hemophiliacs.
Yeah, or men who have sex with men.
Now, I mean, continue, yeah.
Actually, you know, the World Health Organization last year or the year before, everything right now is just running together for me, declared that the heterosexual epidemic is over in the developed world and largely doesn't exist outside of sub-Saharan Africa. But actually, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Please.
Because you talked about HIV education... In your teachings or whatnot,
yeah.
When you talk about sexual transmission in terms of heterosexual transmission,
yeah.
What is the risk of a positive person transmitting it to a negative person?
Oh, God, it's been a while since I've done this, but we've never actually used that in our education. It was more about assuming that everyone that you come in contact with could have a bloodborne virus and to use safe sex practices no matter who you're with.
Okay.
Can you tell me what you found?
Well, interviewing one of the former directors of the Division of AIDS at the CDC and a woman named Nancy Padian, who ran one of the longest heterosexual studies,
yeah.
Both of them told me that transmitting HIV was one of the, if not the hardest, sexually transmitted viruses that you could transmit from one another.
Mm.
And I can tell you that's not something that I learned in my education. And when I traveled all over the world, in every country I asked people how many occurrences of unprotected sex you might have to have before you got the virus.
Yeah.
And universally, everybody said one.
Oh, really?
And her study is something we feature in the film, and I think it's something that people would find very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So that is something, yeah, when you put it that way. Sorry.
Crispy T, did you want to... Crispy T, you've got a question there?
Can I just
finish
this bit?
Sure, go finish that.
Is that I've worked mainly with injecting drug users, and, yeah, one thing that we did point out is that the HIV virus is quite fragile and doesn't live for very long outside the body. And I think people think it's this super virus that is going to infect anyone who breathes near it or something, you know. Sorry, Crispy T, you go ahead.
That's all right. Did you draw any of your research from Alan Cantwell's study? He documented his experience. Alan Cantwell wrote a book called AIDS and the Doctors of Death.
Alan Cantwell.
It's all right.
I think that's from about 20 years ago, that book, isn't it?
It's quite old, yeah.
Yeah.
But he talks of...
is he one of the main researchers in HIV?
Initially, yeah. And he wrote his book, I think 87. And he said that there was the symptoms that were initially coming up on the young gay men in New York was essentially Kaposi's sarcoma, which was the cancerous sort of welts on the chest. And that when he looked at the virus, it had things. It was similar to Visnu virus, and also with which was a sort of Icelandic strain of sheep, wasting syndrome. Did you get into that angle in film at all? Any of those?
No, I think you're talking about what I would consider truly fringe conspiracy theories that HIV was genetically modified through gene splicing in the lab. Is that where you're going with that?
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, you know, the leaders of that movement I found to be unbelievably uncredible.
Not credible, right.
Mm-hmm. One thing...
You have to realize the people that we interviewed in our film are truly the giants of the mainstream HIV research from the beginning until today.
Yeah, one thing I think it's very important to emphasize is that within the AIDS dissident movement, there are some what you might call extreme conspiracy theories, but there are also really highly respected scientists who are leaders in their in their disciplines who were questioning the HIV theory from the beginning. Mm. And one of them is Kary Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for polymerase chain reaction. Although he's not actually an AIDS researcher, he's a highly respected scientist, and his discovery of PCR technique is actually used as one of the main tools in diagnostic of the AIDS viral load test. Is that correct, Brent?
Yes, it is.
Indeed, and he's basically questioned whether the viral load test actually could really test for HIV, because he invented the technique, and he says it doesn't really prove the presence of HIV because it actually breaks everything down into protein or DNA fragments, and so you can't really prove the existence of a virus from doing the test. So I just think it's really
important. The one thing about Kary that I think should be noted is he actually didn't question the HIV equals AIDS equals death equation since from the beginning. It was when he was writing a grant to the NIH, and the first sentence was HIV causes AIDS.
Okay.
And when he was looking for the footnote, the scientific paper that proved that, that's when it took him down that sort of rabbit hole.
Great. Look, we need to have another break. Brent, are you good to come back for another segment? Because we can probably do another 15 minutes after this.
Great.
So we are just going to go to a song momentarily, and we'll be back on Workers Radio with more discussion.
Without going out of my door, I can know all things on earth. Without looking out of my window, I can know the ways of heaven. The farther one travels, the less one knows. The less one really knows. without going out of your door. You can know all things on earth without looking out of your window. You can know the ways of heaven. The farther one travels, the less one knows, the less one really knows. Arrive without traveling, see all without looking, do all without doing.
Workers Radio 88.9 FM, Radio Skid Row. My name is Hereward Fenton, and I'm doing an interview as a guest interviewer today with Brent Leung, who's made a film called House of Numbers. And our phone number is
9550 9552.
Excellent. Brent, we've got about another 10 minutes. Are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Terrific. Look, I just want to, in this last segment, I really want to highlight what we often do on my show is we try to connect the dots, because we cover a lot of areas. You know, we get accused of being conspiracy theorists, but we are actually very interested in science. And I basically only look at things that have good scientific facts behind them. But what I've found in many aspects of controversies over Big Pharma is that there is a predatory behavior pattern from these large organizations, and I mentioned it earlier, but it's really important to stress, because it explains how it's possible that you can get giant mistakes and giant misunderstandings from the general public about really important things. And you know, we look at problems to do with, for example, vaccinations. We look at problems to do with psychiatric medications that are overprescribed. We look at many problems to do with the over-medicalization of human problems, which can actually be treated in other ways rather than resorting to the high-tech chemical treatments. Now, regardless of whether we look at AIDS from the traditional viewpoint and say that it is caused by HIV, et cetera, and even if we accept that, in your interview with Luc Montagne, it was quite clear that there are other ways of dealing with these problems than the chemical, very, very harsh chemical treatments, which are known to have very severe side effects. I just wonder if you'd like to expand on that at all.
Well, I definitely wouldn't want to sort of single out the pharmaceutical companies and say that there's a grand conspiracy going on here. I mean, one of the things that Martin Delaney, who is a mainstream was a mainstream AIDS activist and one of the Hallmark activists in the film, does talk about the fact that pharma does sort of enjoy the profits from people being on drugs for the remainder of their life. But I don't want to go too far and say and blame everything on pharma. And I also don't want to go too far to the other side and say that Luc Montagné is absolutely right and that everybody should get off their medications and we should go down a more holistic route. I do think that Montagné's comments are unbelievably profound, and I think there's something that we have to take extremely seriously, because if what he's saying is in fact true, we are spending a lot of money on what is toxic medication when we could be providing better infrastructure, sanitation, clean water, proper nutrition for people in the developed world that really could benefit from it, not just because of HIV, but because of every other disease that they're being plagued by.
Can we just focus for a second on the question of how toxic medication is? Because a lot of people say these days that, you know, it used to be toxic, but they've improved it so much, it's now not toxic anymore. Is that really true?
Well, I am not a scientist, but I can tell you that HIV medication are, in the United States, are black box drugs. And a black box drug by the Food and Drug Administration is defined as the most potent or toxic treatment approved for use in a human being. The state of California, as of December, coined AZT as the drug AZT, which was the first drug used to treat HIV in the United States, as a cancer-causing agent. So these are very toxic drugs. Luc Montagné, everybody in the film agrees that these are very toxic drugs, even today. they're not as toxic as they were in the 80s or early 90s. It's also important to note that the dosing is a lot lower. But when you watch the film and you listen to mainstream people talk about the medication, it's quite clear that you cannot treat a person for life with these medications, because the medications will probably be the cause of their demise.
Right. So that there is an upper limit to the amount of this medication that your body can take. Even if you were healthy, even if you had no illness to start off with, and you started taking these medications, eventually they would probably kill you. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. There's a woman named Audrey Serrano who tested positive, even though it was a false positive. And in, I believe it was December 2007, she received $2.5 million in damages because the HIV drugs that she took for the virus she did not have nearly killed her.
Right.
And it truly left her damaged for life.
Just
just mentally, but physically, and in terms of her immunity and her health.
Right, right. That's quite appalling. Just one other thing that comes to mind. In your film, did you do any research into Christine Maggiore? There was a lady who was an activist who died recently, and I think her husband actually made a film about AIDS called The Other Side of AIDS. Did you look into that whole story at all?
Yes, Christine actually participated in the film. She was an interviewee. One of the things that Christine talks about in our film is the fact that she's had numerous flip-flopping results with her HIV tests. She tested positive. She took it to an HIV specialist. The HIV specialist told her that her test was not positive. They redid the test. It came out indeterminate. They did the test again. It came out negative. They did the test again. It came out positive. And throughout her term of being diagnosed as an HIV positive patient, she continued to test and she had varying results.
Right, and of course she died fairly recently, sadly, I mean, she obviously was an activist and pretty courageous. I listened to quite a few of her interviews, and of course when she died, it was kind of I read a few articles, basically triumphalism from the debunkers of the AIDS dissident view, saying this is proof that everything she said was wrong because she died of AIDS. Even though she pretended that HIV didn't cause AIDS, she really had it and she died of it, and that's proof that she was wrong. And I just wonder if you could comment on that, or if you've had any comments on that from anyone that you've spoken to.
Well, this is where I would like to comment on the dark side of this debate. I think it's truly appalling, and I think it's really disgusting the way people have sort of waved the flag and used her death to symbolize the fact that they're right and the people that question are wrong. Whether HIV causes AIDS or not, that's no way to treat somebody, their memory. She has a family.
Indeed.
And it's just unbelievably inappropriate. It's about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Christine's autopsy report came out, and she, in fact, did not die of HIV-related disease, according to the autopsy, the toxicologist report. On top of that, her death certificate never indicated that she died of HIV. The doctors did not indicate that she died of HIV. So this is a reason why the film, I really believe, is important, because a lot of people will say, well, that doesn't matter, she did die of HIV. Her symptoms were indicative of that, where other people will say she did not. And I think the honest answer is nobody really knows why Christine died. Nobody knows whether Christine was really infected, because her tests continued to portray different results. And I think that's really important, why people really need to look at this matter further and sort of look into the controversy surrounding testing.
It's very illustrative.
Surrounding treatment.
It's illustrative of the whole controversy. Look, we're going to have to wrap up shortly. Kat's got one question for you.
Yeah, look, I've been sent some information from one of our regular contributors to this program, Bobby, from the USA, and he sent me a link from AIDSTruth.org that is highly critical of yourself and the film, and it says, House of Numbers is a film with a hidden agenda. It tries to make viewers doubt the reality that the virus called HIV exists and causes AIDS. It conceals this agenda behind a false veneer of honest inquiry. The filmmaker told a Huffington Post blogger, I am not a denialist. Posing questions is very different than denying something. I travel the globe speaking with scientists, activists, clinicians, journalists and patients asking questions. My main goal, to educate myself and others and to generate discussion on important questions that have not yet been answered. But he is an HIV denialist. He has said that he is neutral on the AIDS issue of HIV/AIDS, which means he rejects the evidence-based science that has conclusively proved the existence of HIV and its causative role in AIDS, a fatal disease syndrome. His film is supported and promoted only by denialists. What do you have to say about that?
I think it's great that somebody sent that to you. You know what? The fact that it's generating discussion, I think, is unbelievable. I have said this before and I'll say it again. I would love to talk to anybody at AIDSTruth.org mm-hmm. publicly.
Because what they're saying, what they're saying in this article is it's quite long, and it says that you ask fake questions. House of Numbers asks, is there really a scientific consensus about HIV/AIDS? House of Numbers questions the reliability of the HIV test. Does the HIV antibody test actually tell us anything at all? House of Numbers questions the practice of asking about risk factors in testing and diagnosis. Don't doctors just want to know if you are gay or a drug user, and isn't that diagnosis really bogus? And it goes on like this, that it goes on being critical of the questions you ask throughout this movie.
Well, I think it's important that people are critical because we're raising very controversial information. But I think people need to do their own due diligence as well. You know, two scientists have come forward, as you noted, and were very critical about their interviews in the testing section. I have since then released their footage unedited, showing that they were in no way taken out of context at all. What we're dealing with really here is just ad hominem arguments, and people are not pinpointing specifics in the film and having a larger discussion about it. There's a lot of name-calling, there's a lot of insults, and there's a lot of statements being made that are not, in my opinion, founded upon. I would love for the people at AIDSTruth.org to contact us and for us to have a legitimate discussion, not about denialism, but about the film specifically and the subject matter. Because I can tell you personally, I am not an AIDS denialist.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thank you, Brent. That was really, really amazing interview. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I had a great time.
And so everyone listening, go to House of Numbers, www.houseofnumbers.com, and check out the film. And hopefully it'll be on in Sydney. We're waiting to see a screening in Sydney at some point.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Brent.